It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
Hello, folks, and welcome to Kudlow. I'm Larry Kudlow. Well, anti-Semitic protests spinning out of control at New York's Columbia University. Many protests being arrested, some being suspended. These hate crimes deserve nothing less, in my view. Professor Alan Dershowitz will weigh in on all of it in just a moment. Then Congressman Jim Jordan will talk about the collapse of Bidenomics and the fate of Speaker Johnson's foreign aid package. Plus, we have Senator Tommy Tuberville on why Democrats will pay a price for killing the Mayorkas impeachment. Monica Crowley and Alex Marlowe about the collapse of Donald Trump's jury in New York. And finally, the great Claudia Tenney on Biden boosting Iran while Israel's trying to defend the West. Now, let's go straight to Fox News. C.B. Cotton, live at Columbia with all the late... All right, I just said,
Larry,
let's go straight to C.B. Cotton.
Great to be with you.
Thank
so
you.
Columbia University has... Hi, Larry, can you hear me?
I'm going to give them a shot to take if they need this.
Go right ahead.
Larry, I think you may be able to hear me. So Columbia University has kept the campus closed off to everyone except for those with a Columbia ID. But that hasn't kept people from coming here to rally just outside the campus's main gates. Take a look behind me. You can see this large crowd has formed. We've seen a lot of activity here over the past 48 hours. Several arrests actually happened here this morning. And again, another crowd is back, pro-Palestinian demonstrators waving signs, waving Palestinian flags, chanting things from the river to the sea, free Palestine. Again, the phrase from the river to the sea, one critic say is anti-Semitic and calling for the annihilation of Jewish people and for the state of Israel. We have seen the NYPD deploy heavily to Columbia University ever since this protest started on campus, and then again, now it's spread off campus. We've got several officers here in riot gear who have a defensive posture as the number of protesters continues to grow. Larry, as we've been talking about over on the channel, there was a large encampment of students who were protesting. They pitched more than 60 tents on the South Lawn here at Columbia University. This afternoon, we watched as officers removed those protesters. Columbia University's president sent a message to the student body to say these students had been warned multiple times, and she took and made that executive decision to finally authorize the NYPD to come in and to remove those protesters. These pro-Palestinian student groups, they risked interim suspensions, which means they won't be allowed on campus. They won't be allowed to turn in coursework. So they may not complete their courses on time. But several student organizers said on social media they did not care. They were going to stay out there on campus until they were removed, even if force had to be used. And we saw that this afternoon when the NYPD came in and removed those student protesters. We're waiting to find out whether all of them are going to be suspended now from campus, trying to find out more details about that. But again, Larry, we're just watching the numbers continue to grow here outside the campus, where several people continue to come by the hour. They're chanting, they're banging on drums. And as this crowd grows, more officers continue to be mobilized to this area. I'm going to send things back over to you.
C.B. Cotton, I don't know if you can hear me. I was going to ask you, when did Columbia President Shafiq start the warnings? Do you know when she actually publicly started these warnings?
We're told that members of the faculty started yesterday morning going around to those student protesters who, by the way, pitched their tents at 4 a.m. yesterday, according to the student paper. So we're told that shortly after that, members of the faculty started walking around among the tents, warning students that they were violating campus policies. And then we're told from the university that those students received several more warnings throughout the day and were told, hey, anybody who remains in this encampment beyond 9 p.m., again, you face interim suspension. But like I mentioned, Larry, several of these student organizers, several of the student protesters have been talking about on social media that they did not care. They were willing to face that risk. And now we're watching as a group of social workers who appear to be affiliated with the university in some sort of advocacy or activist sense. They're affiliated with the university. They appear to be social workers, and they're also activists. They are now trying to get support for the students who have been detained by the NYPD. So we're watching to see what develops with this situation. A lot of action out here at Columbia University.
All right, great stuff. CB Cotton, thank you ever so much. Be safe yourself. We appreciate it. All right, folks, just a couple words from me. After being grilled and bombarded yesterday in Congress before the House Education Committee, today Columbia University President Dr. Manoush Shafiq went home to New York and summoned the police to remove anti-Israel protesters from Columbia's campus. I think the two events are not unrelated. She was grilled in Washington yesterday, and today she had to call in the cops. Her message? These were extraordinary steps because these are extraordinary circumstances. I'm sure that's right, but she wanted to sound and look tough in order to keep her job, in contrast to, for example, Harvard University's Claudine Gay, who you may recall got the axe because she neither looked nor acted tough on anti-Semitism. Anti-Semitism is the issue. So Columbia Shafiq had the New York cops clear the campus. Many of these kids are going to be arrested. Many will be suspended. Many probably won't be able to take exams. Some aren't going to be graduating. Me, I still see the problem for these elite Ivy League schools as principally their presidents and their boards of directors are still afraid to label anti-Semitism a hate crime. You had kids out there screaming, "We are Hamas." Okay, you have, you know, this business river to the sea. These are anti-Semitic statements. These are hate crimes. Now, just imagine student protesters were attacking blacks or transgenders or other woke identities. How fast would these Ivy presidents kick everybody out? Probably lock them up in jail. I guess Manoush Shafiq comes out better than some of these elite schools because at least she took an action and did lay down the law and put in a true red line of sorts and several warnings, as C.B. Cotton suggested, so better late than never. But Shafiq said to Congress she's got more work to do. The school's not really prepared for these kinds of situations. Now, in fairness, she did fire an anti-Semitic professor, a guy named Mohammed Abdu. But like most of these big-time schools, officials are still afraid to talk about Jewish history and experience going back to the Holocaust, back to Joseph Stalin, and throughout history, about the persecution of Jews. And that is a hate crime. After all, isn't a hate crime a hate crime? Isn't anti-Semitism anti-Semitism? There shouldn't be any room for any of that in any of our schools. The college presidents have a lot more work to do, but at least Shafiq brought the cops in, cleared the protesters out. So for the moment, I will score this one for some appropriate sanity. Maybe there's some progress. Maybe I'm not right either. Let's talk about Alan Dershowitz, professor emeritus at Harvard University and the author of War Against the Jews, How to End Hamas Barbarism. Professor Dershowitz, you know more about this subject than me, probably than almost anybody on the planet. I'm giving this Columbia president a little bit of a plus because she seems to have done something. But more importantly, what do you think, sir?
Well, she gets about a B minus with grade inflation because she hasn't dealt with the problem. The core problem is DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion, intersectionality. These dominate universities today, and they're the sources of anti-Semitism. Let me tell you a story about one professor. His name is Joseph Massad. He is the one who praised Hamas on October 7th and said what they did was a wonderful thing. He is pro-Hamas. I opposed his tenure before he got tenure. I told the university that he was a third-rate academic. He had called on a Jewish student as a teacher. And when the student said and started talking, Joseph Massad, the professor, said, "You seem to have an Israeli accent. Are you Israeli?" He said, "Yes." He said, "Can't speak in my class unless you're prepared to say that Israel has committed war crimes." This is a professor. He hadn't gotten tenure yet. And Columbia University gave him tenure, not despite his being anti-Israel, but precisely because of it. They wanted anti-Israel professors on the faculty because they were getting funding from anti-Israel countries. This is a much deeper problem. This goes back years and years and years. And until and unless universities like Harvard and Columbia get rid of, uproot completely from top to bottom, the DEI bureaucracy and the intersectionality bureaucracy, this will continue and it will destroy every major university in America and turn American universities into the same third-rate institutions that Professor Joseph Massad is as a third-rate scholar. So, boy, does she have work to be done. And some of it's going to be difficult because her faculty won't support her. Many of her students won't support her. The problem is a lot deeper than what we see on television today. What we see on television today is the tip of the iceberg. But don't call these people pro-Palestinian. They are anti-Palestinian. They're pro-Hamas. Hamas has been destroying the Palestinian cause. They hang gays. They murder dissidents. They discriminate against women. They cause the death of all these people by using human shields. So these pro-Hamas people are not pro-Palestinian. They're anti-Jewish, they're anti-Palestinian, and they're anti-decency.
Professor Dershowitz, am I completely wrong? I look at this and I say to myself, you've got these college presidents in big-time schools. You've got the boards of directors who are really running the show. They are afraid to label these anti-Semitic statements as hate crimes. Just say they're hate.
Right.
They're a hate crime. I mean, am I wrong about that?
No, you're 100% right. A friend of mine who was the president of a major college said to me the one criteria that doesn't exist for being the president of a university or a member of the board is courage. These folks have no courage, no guts. They want everybody to love them, and they can't do that. This is a time for making hard, hard decisions. And universities are not good at making those kinds of decisions. So what we're going to see today and tomorrow is universities being responsive to Congresswoman Stefanik, who's done a great job in exposing this. And they'll do one or two things. But the deep problem of continuing to have a bureaucracy, which is against equality in favor of equity, which is the opposite of equality, you judge people based on their ethnicity and based on their race and religion, they won't do anything to dismantle the real problems here and to stop hiring people because of their hatred of Israel or even the numbers of students. When I was teaching at Harvard 10 years ago, Harvard Jewish students were 23% of the student body. Today they're 9%, less than they were when they had quotas, anti-Jewish quotas. So the DEI bureaucracy is anti-Semitic, not only in effect, but in intent. And until it's gotten rid of, we're going to see this problem get worse and worse and worse. And no president is prepared to take on this bureaucracy. I spoke at Cardoza Law School, Yeshiva University Law School, and I spoke against DEI. And the dean of the law school said, "We're doubling down. Everybody has to support DEI. DEI is part of what Cardoza Law School is about." She is part of the problem, not part of the solution. And many of these administrators are the cause of the problem. And you know, today just demonstrates what's going to happen to American universities. Jewish students today are not safe at many American universities.
Well put, sir. Well put, Professor Alan Dershowitz. We appreciate it very much. Tough stuff, but I know you're on target. Talk soon. Thank you very much. All right, folks, coming up here on Kudlow, Congressman Jim Jordan on the collapse of Bidenomics And the fate of Speaker Mike Johnson's foreign aid package. Will Mr. Johnson hang on to his speakership? And will the foreign aid bill pass? And remember, you can catch Kudlow Monday through Friday at 4 p.m. right here. Fox Business every day. But if you can't catch us at 4 for some reason, please just text your favorite 9-year-old and she will show you how to DVR the show. And then you will never miss a thing. I'm Kudlow. We'll be right back.
Helicopter blades spinning, safety harnesses on, and a crew ready for anything Mother Nature blows their way. Recently, the U.S. Coast Guard on the Gulf Coast granted unique access to Fox Weather.
Definitely something on fire right there.
We flew above New Orleans and the water that surrounds to get a perspective on how the region looks nearly a year after Hurricane Ida.
6047,
and how these heroes are preparing for the 2022 hurricane season.
Unfortunately, we are looking at what's probably going to be a very busy season. The Gulf of Mexico is already very warm.
We are about to fly over a levee, and as you know, so important to the protection of New Orleans and the surrounding area. This is essentially in a bowl surrounded by water, and these levees are the protection for this entire metropolitan area. They've been tested many times. The latest, Hurricane Ida, last August.
On the front lines of natural disasters, every year the U.S. Coast Guard responds to approximately 20,000 search and rescue cases and saves about 4,000 lives nationwide.
Just like any enemy, a hurricane becomes an enemy once it hits landfall. We'll encircle it.
From staying in top physical condition to prepping for tropical storm season, in the air and on the water, thousands of servicemen and women operate along the Gulf Coast. Storm history is always used as a learning tool.
The Gulf Coast learned a lot during Hurricane Katrina, and a lot of those lessons were applied during Hurricane Ida last year. For instance, 3 or 4 days before the storm hit, we actually had 40 helicopters and airplanes here in Mobile ready to go. One of the finest hours here in Mobile.
Two states away in Louisiana, the New Orleans Coast Guard operations took the brunt of Hurricane Ida last August.
We took direct impact here of 100-plus mile-an-hour winds at the air station. We had significant damage to the hangar that forced us to what we call mobilize and evacuate our resources from this area.
After Ida passed, the teams assessed and assembled. Just hours after the winds whipped through, the Coast Guard took to the air and water.
We surged operations in between 3 in the morning and 5 in the morning, and had the first aviation resources over the area prior to sunrise.
We had to deal with low visibility, low ceilings, and high precipitation. But our main thing was to see if anybody was in distress.
That way, when the people of New Orleans and Gulfport woke up and storm had passed, the first thing they heard was Coast Guard helicopters above them.
Dozens of people were rescued. Storm surge flooded many communities, and the winds decimated the barrier island of Grand Isle, Louisiana, which is still not recovered.
Been through hurricanes before I was in the Coast Guard, and I've seen the impact that the Coast Guard has rescuing people, saving their lives, pulling people from their very worst day they've ever had.
Hurricane training and preps never stop for these brave men and women watching and protecting the 95,000 miles of U.S. coastline and beyond. In Louisiana, Robert Ray, Fox Weather.
Nobody The consumer is strong. The balance sheets are strong.
Brings you America's business news.
There's so much going on.
And what it means for you.
We want to get some breaking news to you right now. Fox Business Alert.
Like Fox Business, keeping you ahead of the curve.
All the insider selling by some of the richest people on earth.
With insight into the impact of U.S. and global markets.
That's where the recipe for inflation comes
from. The people you can trust.
Let's have some fun with this.
Fox Business, America's business network.
All right, our own Edward Lawrence. He's got some details on the decline of Bidenomics, the stubbornness of inflation, futures of deficit and debt. He joins us now from the White House. Good evening, Edward.
Yeah, and you know, the IMF, Larry, is calling out the United States, saying that the huge deficits in the United States are posing a significant risk to the global economy. Now, the IMF called out the U.S. as one of four countries that, quote, needs to take policy action to address fundamental imbalances between spending and revenue. The U.S., China, United Kingdom, and Italy all on that list. President Joe Biden signed more than $7 trillion in spending into law. The deficit this fiscal year is supposed to be $1.5 trillion. Experts say, well, they look at the nation and inflation, and they say that President Biden is making the same mistakes as a former Democratic president.
But it's caused by that profligate spending in Washington, D.C. And look, as they say, everything that goes around comes around. I'm seeing so much of those same mistakes of the Carter administration.
Now, with the growing federal debt, the faculty director for the Penn Wharton budget model put the U.S. fiscal path into a time frame.
Fiscal policy in general is not sustainable right now. In particular, we estimate that the Penn Wharton budget model, that we really, under the most optimistic circumstances, have about 20 years before everything kind of comes crashing down.
And he says the debt would cause an inflation spiral. The government would print money to pay for the federal debt. Then the Federal Reserve would have to accept 4% inflation. And then the bond yields would in turn respond as a higher rates there. Listen.
So people say, well, that's for, you know, Latin America, that's for Asia, that's for Zimbabwe and countries like that, right? You know, post-war Germany, Hungary and so forth. Nope, that's for here, too.
So in an interview with a local news outlet, the president saying that he is lowering junk fees and that helps costs with Americans. He's saying that his spending is actually reducing inflation from the peak. Back to you, Larry.
Sure it is, Ed. You know, that's Edward, it's very Orwellian. You really got to be up on your George Orwell. It's very Orwellian.
You do. Yeah. You have to pay attention to all of these things together coming together. And they're fitting in these pieces. I mean, you talk about inflation and it's connected around the globe because when our bond yields are higher, other countries can't afford the yields as they get more. Maybe we can handle it, but other countries can't. And that pushes them into poverty.
Yeah. Junk fees, luggage fees. Anyway, Edward Lawrence, no junk fee there. Yeah. Now, let's bring in my great friend, Ohio Congressman Jim Jordan, chair of the House Judiciary Committee, but is also an economic expert. Jim Jordan, yeah, and you want to talk about the economy, and I know you're very good at it. So you heard this report. Here, even the IMF is criticizing us. I mean, there's not exactly supply-siders over there. You got this guy from Penn Wharton model, no supply-siders there. Too much spending, too much borrowing, too many deficits, inflation, interest rates. I mean, Joe Biden's out there today talking about junk fees and how we shouldn't have to pay baggage fees or whatever. If I had any hair, I'd be pulling it out, Jim Jordan. What am I? This Bidenomics thing, it ain't working.
Bidenomics ain't working, and even the IMF knows it and tells us about it. I mean, for goodness sake, record deficits, record debt caused by record spending, bad tax policy, actually raising taxes, bad regulatory policy, and certainly bad energy policy. And you wonder why we have record inflation and why eggs and milk and everything else cost more than it did under President Trump. It's because of Bidenomics. It's just doesn't work, and everyone understands that. It's one of the key reasons why I think, and we've talked about this a lot, Larry, why I think President Trump's going to win. That and the border, I think, are front and center in voters and citizens' mind, and that's why I think President Trump is going to win this election. Frankly, why he's up in six of the seven swing states, and he's even in Wisconsin, but he's winning in all the other seven swing states.
Are you kidding? He's going to carry Harlan and the rest of New York. They can't even keep him down. They let him out of the jury for 1 minute. He goes up to Harlan, and all the bodegas come out and endorse him. It's the greatest thing I've ever seen. I mean, it's very cool. But, you know, it's so interesting. So, again, here's Biden talking about junk fees. But actually, the IMF is talking about $7 trillion of spending, right? The equivalent number of deficits. And now the borrowing story is moving towards $35 trillion. It's on its way to $50 trillion, according to the CBO 10-year baseline. So, no, people can't afford to live in the Biden economy. Prices up 20% under Biden, 19.8 or whatever the CPI is. Wages up less than that. They have an affordability crisis. And no one in the White House wants to address it or be honest about it or deal with it. That's what's so incredible to me.
Yeah. Well, and they want to continue it. They just keep spending, whether it's, we'll forgive your loan, we'll pay for this, we'll pay for that, just exacerbating the already ridiculously dangerous problem that we have. So, yeah, it doesn't. When you keep spending and debt to GDP ratios are way out of whack, we got this kind of interest we have to pay, over $1 trillion in interest. As the IMF said, you cannot sustain that. Again, when we had President Trump, real wages and your tax policies and President Trump's tax policies, real wages were up for across the population, all demographics in our population. Real wages were up. Real income was up. More take-home pay. Prices down. I mean, it was humming along. And then, of course, we got what we have now with Joe Biden.
Poverty down. Lowest unemployment rate for minorities. Biden lies about this all the time. He just does. He lies about it all the time. But people are smarter, and you are right. Here's another one for you. This latest tranche of student loans, whatever it is, election year, vote buying, this Penn Wharton model came out yesterday, Jim, or the day before, and said the student loan cancellations will cost $500 billion. Half of $1 trillion.
Half a trillion.
Now, I know it's unconstitutional, and I know it's illegal, but that's what Biden's trying to do. He disregards any parameters of reasonableness. He's not fighting inflation. He's just trying to buy votes.
Trying to buy votes and exacerbating the problem that we just talked about, but also it's just morally wrong. How about the people who did pay for their education, the families who paid for their son or daughter's education, or that individual who said, I'm going to work my way through school. I'm going to go a longer time and work my way and pay for it myself. Or the one who skipped going to higher education and went to trade school or started their own business, for goodness sake. How is it fair to them? So there's the economic cost, what that does to our country, our economy, and to the budget. But there's also the moral cost. It's just morally wrong to do that when other people made other decisions and paid for it.
So, all right, let's just a couple more things. First of all, Speaker Johnson was on the show last night. He went through his paces about the new foreign funding bill attached with a border bill. What do you make of it, Jim Jordan? Can this package get through?
I think it can. I'm not a big fan of the structure. I'm 100% for helping Israel. I'm going to vote to help our dearest and closest ally, the state of Israel. The segment you had on with Professor Dershowitz, I thought was very telling, just how bad it is in some of these college campuses, the anti-Semitism and everything else. That is so wrong. So we need to help Israel, our dearest and best friend. I'm going to vote for that. Then they're going to put this package back together after we have these individual votes, and then we'll see how it goes. But, yeah, I'm for helping Israel, not so much for the Ukraine issue. I think we should be focused on fixing our border before we send a bunch more money to Ukraine.
Amen. TikTok is in there. Can we sell TikTok? Should we sell TikTok?
I voted for the bill when it was here. And I got to tell you, Larry, I walked to the floor, and it was a tough call because we've had so much of this Congress where we focused on the censorship effort and what government was doing, pressuring tech to take down speech. So you got that concern. But then the fact that, you know, the parent company, ByteDance, is in fact affiliated with the Chinese Communist Party. So we balance that all out. We'll see how that gets put together. There's a fourth part to this bill. There's the Taiwan, Ukraine, Israel, which I'm 100% for, and then this element here. So we'll see how that all gets put back together after we have the individual votes. We haven't really seen all that yet, so how that fourth part will be put together.
You know, Joe Biden keeps there. You hear these rumors. You know, reported from Axios and Politico, whispers from the White House that Biden is going to exercise some executive authority. I've heard him now for a month. I don't see anything. He's got authority, as you know. What is it, 212F and 287G? Yep. He could have closed down the border. He could have enlisted help from police forces across the country. He hadn't done a damn thing, not one single thing yet.
No, and he continues to move in the wrong direction on parole. And we released a study earlier this week that shows that, you know, they created this problem, and then they go train ICE agents to, oh, now you don't want to detain certain people, you don't want to deport certain people. Even we had testimony, even people who have been guilty of larceny and theft are allowed to be released into the country. And you wonder why we have all these tragic situations happening to Americans. Of course, the one most recently, most tragic, was Laken Riley, what happened to her. And we've tried to get the files on all these individuals, and the Mayorkas and the DHS won't share them with us. So we're still trying to get that information. But we released an interim report yesterday spelling out how serious this problem is.
Last one, Jim Jordan, and thank you for your time, as always. Will Speaker Johnson stay as Speaker Johnson? Is he going to make it?
I hope so. I mean, I really do. Mike's a good man in a tough situation. We do not need a third speaker in one Congress, for goodness sake. I hope this motion to vacate doesn't come. I was against it for, you know, when they did it to Speaker McCarthy. I thought that was wrong. Certainly wrong now as well. So let's hope not. Let's stay focused on what needs to happen in 6 months.
Right.
We need President Trump in the White House. We need to win back the United States Senate and keep the U.S. House so we can address the craziness of Biden economics, so we can, you know, get things under control, get the economy growing, secure the border, and stop some of the craziness we see from today's left.
You know, Jim Jordan, you are the best of the best. I totally agree with what you just said. I totally agree. Let's focus on what we need to be focusing on, which is change and a retirement policy in the White House. Jim Jordan, really the best of the best. Thank you, sir. We appreciate it very much.
You bet, Larry.
All right, folks, coming up in just a moment, Senator Tommy Tuberville is going to talk about Democrats will pay a price for killing the Mayorkas impeachment articles. And then we got Monica Crowley and Alex Marlowe coming after that. I'm Kudlow. We'll be right back.
Mornings with Maria on Fox Business.
Every morning, I want to empower my viewers to move their families forward and seize the day.
All the news that drives the markets and beyond. Mornings with Maria on Fox Business. Invested in you.
My father had a vision that it would be possible to have a bridge across the Chesapeake Bay from the eastern shore to Norfolk.
Lucius Kellum was from the eastern shore of Virginia, and he wanted to see what was best for this region. It was in his heart.
He quickly realized that the ferry system was overwhelmed, couldn't handle all the regular traffic of people crossing the bay, and came up with the idea to build a fixed crossing.
Kellum proposed a system of bridges and tunnels. Two high-level bridges would stretch for about 1 mile each. Two one-mile tunnels would run under the shipping lanes. It would all be tied together by 12 miles of trestle, about 20 feet above the water.
At the time, it was absolutely unheard of. It was thought to be impossible.
This had never been done before, especially in such a tumultuous marine environment.
When the winds pick up, we can easily experience 80 to 120 mile an hour winds, not just from hurricanes, but from a typical squall or a storm coming across the bay.
Access was incredibly challenging, and it was risking life.
The project was enormous, and just the engineering part of it was just unheard of.
Leif Sverdrup assembled one of the largest marine construction armadas in history, and he led it way out into Chesapeake Bay.
Chesapeake Bay is really wide at the mouth. You can't see from one side to the other. How do you go from one landmass to another if you can't see it?
So Sverdrup built a survey tower every 2 miles along the route.
That way you could see from one tower to the other. You could accurately measure to be able to get this facility built.
They set out to construct two bridges, two tunnels, and more than 12 miles of elevated trestle over the churning Chesapeake.
The low-level trestle is a thread that ties everything together. It ties the tunnels to the high-rise bridges and to the land.
To support the trestle, they needed a series of concrete piles strong enough to stand up to the Chesapeake.
Some of the other challenges with the piling is the seafloor is constantly shifting. Every time the tide goes in and out of the bay, it shifts a little bit, goes one way or the other, the channels move.
Instead of pouring the concrete into forms, they used centrifugal force to spin them.
As it spun, it basically flung the concrete to the walls. And as it flung that concrete out at a very high rate, it created a very dense concrete mix. And that dense concrete is what allows us to survive in the marine environment here.
Some exciting discoveries in the Holy Land that will take visitors back in time once they're open to the public. Today we got a behind-the-scenes look at this active archaeological site.
Right now we're in the city of David, where archaeologists have started a new excavation to uncover an ancient pool. In the Bible, the Pool of Siloam is where Jesus is said to have healed a blind man. It's also where millions of pilgrims came to bathe in a ritual bath before hiking up to the Second Temple to pray. Now, for the first time in 2,000 years, the site will be open to the public, allowing people from around the world to walk in the footsteps where Jesus once stood.
The site you saw there does have some political implications and controversies attached to it. The temple where Jews and Christians believe Jesus walked to from that pool now houses the Al-Aqsa Mosque, the third holiest site in Islam.
Hello to our viewers in Canada watching on Rogers. Thanks for choosing Fox. For more, check out foxbusiness.com and foxnews.com.
The Evening Edit with Elizabeth McDonald.
One of the biggest goals of the show is to look out for Americans. We pull back the curtain and show you what's really going on.
Elizabeth McDonald is breaking the biggest stories. The Evening Edit on Fox Business. Invested in you.
All right, joining me now is Alabama Senator Tommy Tuberville. Senator Tuberville, thank you, sir. It's good to see you. Can I just ask you, so, you know, Chuck Schumer stopped this whole Mayorkas impeachment, broke a lot of constitutional history from what I gather. Question is, will Democrats pay a price? You've got swing state senators who voted with Schumer away from, you know, they didn't want to touch the impeachment hearing and the catastrophe at the border. How do you make that? What do you think about that? Is that going to be an election issue?
Well, first of all, Larry, that was politics 101 for Chuck Schumer. He got all of his ducks lined up in a row. They all, 51 of them, voted to not to have a trial for Mayorkas. I would think that probably Mitch McConnell needs to go by some of those rules. You know, he put Trump on trial twice as majority leader of the Senate, but he goes by the rules of the Senate. Yes, I think they'll pay the price for this because people across the country understand what's going on at the border. It's been publicized too much. The first couple of years in Biden administration, mainstream media says, nah, the border's closed. Don't worry about that. But now they are hammering the border. Everybody's seeing what's going on. It's a catastrophe. But yesterday was a debacle in the Senate. That's my worst 4 hours since I've been up here. It's a shame that we have people that care more about other countries than we do about ours, Larry, but they will pay the price for this.
I thought that there was going to be a GOP effort to just shut down Senate business, period, if Schumer did what he did. But I don't see that effort.
Well, we don't have enough people to do it. We've still got people up here in the Republican side. They're going to do what they think is right. And we don't fall in line like the Democrats. You know, we're individual thinkers. We're supposed to think for our own states. You know, you got John Tester that votes against this impeachment trial. And he's from a red state. He will pay the price for that. Mm-hmm. And he knows that. And there's other people who will do the same thing. And they should, because you represent the people of your state, not yourself. There's too many individual thinkers up here. We've got some on our side. They don't have many on their side because they know they will not get reelected or reelection money, Larry, if they do not follow Chuck Schumer's orders.
Let me switch gears. Another subject, the Iran attack on Israel. And, of course, Biden is telling everybody he's not going to help Israel if they retaliate, which is insane. But I want to ask something else. National Security Advisor comes out, and they say, we're going to, and Janet Yellen comes out and says the same thing. Jake Sullivan says this. We're putting sanctions down on Iran. And they have some paper sanctions on, I don't know, steel is the latest one I saw. Iran, not known for its steelmaking. Not once since they loosened the sanctions, Senator, not once have they gone after Iranian oil exports, which have gone from 900,000, their production has gone from 900,000 barrels a day to 3.5 million barrels a day. And as you probably know, it's all China, virtually all of it's China. China is importing 1.5 million barrels a day from Iran. China is financing Iran's war of terrorism against Israel. Okay, Russia too, but I'm focused on the Bidens would rather keep the price of gasoline down than they would help protect Israel's independence. What do you make of that?
Well, you're exactly right. We got two wars going on right now, Larry. One with Russia, obviously with Ukraine. There's oil involved in that. But China's bailing them out because China is buying their oil. We couldn't put the sanctions. We've got, what, 40,000 sanctions on Russia, and not one of them have worked. On the other hand, Iran, we've made them rich because we have not been able to block the sale of Iranian oil, and we're even buying Iranian oil. So at the end of the day, Joe Biden speaks out of both sides of his mouth. He better back Israel. He won't last too much longer in this office if he doesn't back Israel, because the people that are really giving him a lot of money want him to back Israel. So they're our ally. But, you know, Joe Biden speaks out of both sides of his mouth, and they're riding the fence on this. It's going to get them in trouble. But it all goes back to all of this. Do what's right. He's not doing what's right in either war that I think of.
You know, just the last one, Senator. I don't know this with certainty, but I think if Donald Trump were president and Iran kept selling oil and China kept buying oil from Iran and breaking the sanctions, I think Trump would double or triple the tariffs on China. He would just stop their trade cold. You know, tariffs can be used as an important diplomatic weapon. It's not all about trade. Like in Remain in Mexico, that's how Trump got that done. I mean, I would say in the White House, Trump would say to Xi Jinping, either you stop buying Iranian oil or you're going to stop selling anything to the United States. What do you think of that kind of toughness?
Exactly. You got to be tough. If you're going to be tough, you got to play tough, but you got to use your cards. We don't play our cards in any situation that we're in. We hadn't played our cards right with Iran. We haven't played our cards right with China and Russia. We hadn't played our cards right as Republicans when it comes to sending all this money overseas. We could have stopped the people at the border if we'd have played our cards right, but we folded our cards and we gave our cards and let the hand be played by the Democrats. So there's a lot of things President Trump would have done and would have all been settled by now. We have never been in this war, probably neither one of these wars, had he been president. But show of leadership, the lack of leadership in the White House we have right now, Larry, it's nowhere to be found.
Yes, sir. Senator Tuberville, great to see you. Thank you for your time, sir.
Thank you.
We appreciate it, as always. All right, we're going to talk a little politics. Joining me now, Monica Crowley, host of the Monica Crowley podcast, Alex Marlowe, editor-in-chief of Breitbart News and co-author of the Breitbart Business Digest. Welcome to both of you. Alex, I was going to say the Trump trial, the Trump jury out there in New York was suffering from shrinkflation because they keep losing jurors. But now apparently I'm told producers are telling me they lost two today, but they made two back. But I got to tell you, look at this thing. Apart from the legalities, jurors in and jurors out, it's kind of farcical. I think it just I think the Democrats, this thing's backfiring on the Democrats. What do you think?
Well, if you look at the polls, you're actually seeing Joe Biden close some of the gap that you and I talked about last time, Larry. So I'm a bit concerned about this just because it's so inappropriate. It's so frankly insane that we're doing this. Donald Trump is months away from a national election. He's the Republican nominee presumptive, and he's not able to campaign because he's tied to New York. It's a for him. He's creative. He goes to a bodega. He creates a great news cycle for himself. But this is such an outrage. It's such third world stuff. And we're treating it as though it's some sort of a joke. This is not a joke. This is dead serious, and it's completely awful.
Monica, can Trump take New York? Ha, ha, ha. I know it's funny, but Lee Zeldin lost up five and a half points, 300,000 votes. And watching Trump up there at the bodegas yesterday, I don't know. He wants to speak at Madison Square Garden. He wants to speak at Yankee Stadium. What do you think?
Well, and he should, because if he's chained to New York for the next 6 or 8 weeks over this bogus trial over fraudulent charges when Donald Trump did nothing wrong, then he should maximize his time there. And so I'm all for him doing these mini rallies, making these kinds of stops, and trying to flip deep blue places like New York and possibly New Jersey. Now, everybody says it's an uphill battle, and it is. But look, there are moments in time where even deep blue voters, Larry, hit a wall. Mm. And I think what you saw when he visited that bodega and he had thousands of people out on the street in Harlem chanting four more years, four more years. Right. It's because even these deep blue voters see the cost of living crisis with skyrocketing inflation, gas prices, grocery prices. They can't make ends meet. And they've got a quality of life crisis. Those two things are militating against Joe Biden and the Democrats and militating for Donald Trump. And it's up to him to maximize a bit. But so far, I have seen him work miracles once before.
Well.
Yes.
Alex Marlow, by the way, not to belabor the point, but I will belabor the point a little bit. He's going to schedule a rally in New Jersey. OK, another deep blue state. But then again, in the gubernatorial election in New Jersey, the incumbent governor didn't win by very much against someone who was completely unknown. And, you know, Monica, the issue are affordability issues, inflation higher than wages, and the border and crime. That stuff resonates at some point, Alex. It resonates in blue states as well.
Yeah, we were looking at some of the polls this week at Breitbart, and we were noting how much progress Trump is making with 18 to 29-year-old voters. Mm-hmm. They just don't like Joe Biden. They see the state of the economy. They're concerned about the border. They don't think he does enough, some of the left-wingers and stuff like the environment. So I think Trump is going to build a unique coalition in this election. Is it enough to get a state like New Jersey? I'm all for trying. It's such great theater and spectacle, and that's the tools he has to play with right now.
And it ties up Biden and his minions and his money, and it's not supposed to happen. I got to get out. I'm sorry. We always run short of time. Monica Crowley, thank you ever so much. Alex Marlow, appreciate it. Coming up here on Kudlow, Congresswoman Claudia Tenney is going to talk to me about Joe Biden and Iran. Joe Biden and Iran. She should be talking about Joe Biden and Israel, but it's Iran. And I want to revisit this issue. Trump would have slammed China with massive tariffs if they kept buying oil and financing the Iranian war against Israel. That's my take. I'm Kudlow. Be right back, folks.
We view the world the same way.
I'm sure we'll have some disagreements, but you don't want to get her mad.
No, you don't.
The Bottom Line with Dagan and Duffy on Fox Business.
AI is rolling out across healthcare systems nationwide. It's already helping doctors and nurses diagnose, treat, and monitor patients. And some AI tech is even able to spot potential problems well before a doctor could. The National Bureau of Economic Research estimates AI could also cut 5 to 10% in U.S. healthcare spending. We're talking about saving $360 billion within the next 5 years. Tech companies also see a big way to make some money here. One company looking to capitalize, it's a company called Regard. Its software aims to be an AI co-pilot for doctors. It processes data, helping with diagnosing, and the company says it's already deployed its tech to some 30 hospitals. But getting patients on board with this, that could be a bit of a tougher sell. A recent survey from Pew Research found 60% of people would be uncomfortable if their provider relied on AI for care.
Patients simply don't trust a machine over a human being, but they are welcoming of a machine to assist a surgeon or a physician in making a diagnosis or remedying care.
Now, experts we spoke with, they agree that doctors aren't going to be replaced by AI anytime soon. However, this technology is advancing really fast here, so we're going to see more AI and tech and everything from EKGs to X-ray readings, and this technology is just rolling out pretty much across the medical field.
For centuries, astronomers have studied the sky for answers to the great questions of human existence. How did we get here? Are we alone? Ever since Galileo pointed his telescope to the sky, scientists have refined his invention. But you know, Earthbound observatories can only see so much.
As NASA developed the shuttle, it began work on a space telescope, too. The leader of the telescope team was Dr. Nancy Grace Roman.
Nancy Grace Roman is really often known as the mother of Hubble. She was the first chief astronomer at NASA, and she was one of the real advocates to get the funding and the programming for a telescope in space.
By 1970, Dr. Roman had the scientific community behind her and the engineering power of NASA at her fingertips. But the shuttle program was still just ideas on paper, so she would need to convince Congress of the value of a hypothetical telescope to go inside it.
Convincing Congress is not an easy endeavor in most big science projects. What we actually discover is something we can't even imagine, which makes it hard to explain on the front end exactly why you want to do it.
The mother of Hubble made a pitch that was simple and direct. This scientific instrument would change man's understanding of the universe and our place in it.
Nancy was able to explain to Congress how important this telescope was.
And Hubble would be more than just a telescope. The school bus-sized spacecraft would fit inside the shuttle's cargo bay. The spacecraft itself would house an optical telescope, scientific instruments, and guidance equipment. Once released, two massive solar arrays would unfurl to power it all. But perhaps the most significant design element would be its serviceability.
Hubble is extremely unique because it's a serviceable telescope.
That's where the big engineering went into this telescope. That really gave Hubble the power it did because we were able to keep constantly upgrading it.
It had to be built so that astronauts floating around in big bulky spacesuits, kind of like working on your car with boxing gloves is the way I would describe it. Connectors had to have big wing tabs on them, so you, with a gloved hand you could do that. Bolts that you would drive required a power tool that needed to be developed. Put handrails all over the telescope, doors. All of these things have to be considered in order to make it serviceable, but that's exactly what they did.
All right, we welcome back the great Claudia Tenney, Congresswoman from upstate New York. Claudia, I'm reading about you. You're so famous. Big interview in Breitbart, and exclusive. Representative Tenney slams Biden for boosting Iran and saying Israel is fighting for the West against Islamic terrorism. And you make a point about appeasement, which I love. And I just want to make another point. I mentioned it with Senator Tuberville. The Bidens refused to do anything about China buying all the oil from Iran, which is their major source of funding. They're up to 1.5 million barrels a day, Chinese imports from Iran. And the sanctions that Trump had down, the maximum pressure campaign, it was about zero. I mean, this, and the Bidens don't want to do a thing about it, Claudia.
No, you're exactly right. It was a hard focus on Iran with the maximum pressure campaign under President Trump and with the coordination with Secretary Pompeo. We were able to really stall their ability to sell all this oil to China. And all that money now is flowing into Iran, and they're using it for proxies like Hamas, Hezbollah, Islamic Jihad. And they're using that money not for the prosperity of their own nation, but to really disrupt and to take out Israel, which is their stated goal, which is a goal against the United States. And remember, sanctions actually expired last year that we wanted reintroduced on their ability to continue making and producing ballistic missiles. Those expired. Guess what they shot on Israel? First time ever that actually Iran shot missiles from its own soil to Israeli soil without using their proxies. And Biden is out there hemming and hawing and walking into convenience stores and really not taking a strong position on Israel, because this election could be decided by one district in Michigan that is now represented by Rashida Tlaib, the ground zero of the ceasefire movement. And if Biden doesn't, if he makes a false move in there, that district could actually decide that swing state, which means President Trump would win and defeat Biden. All they care about is politics, not the preservation and protection of Israel. They're our stalwart against not only Islamic jihadism, but they're defending all of democracy in the Middle East.
You know, I have suggested again and again, Claudia, The Bidens are more worried about election year gasoline prices than they are Israel's security. And, you know, by the way, not only have they lifted the Iranian sanctions, selling all that oil to China and not saying a thing about it, they've lifted the Venezuelan sanctions. And that's all about the price of gas. Venezuela is a communist country in our backyard, sending millions of illegals up here, and they're lifting sanctions, and Maduro has had anything but a free election.
Oh, of course. And this is not about free elections. It's about raw power. It's a power grab, and that's all they care about, because when they're in power, they abuse power, and that's what they're doing. And they have no interest in our allies, the safety and security of the United States. It's why we have so many problems at our border, whether it's drug trafficking, human trafficking, and now criminals. We are seeing crime at an incredible rate in New York. And the big scandal out there is everyone says, well, the crime rate's about the same. You know why? Because they're not reporting it. It's not being reported in New York. We just had a judge in a tiny little county in my new district that was forced by New York laws and Letitia James, who should be disbarred and removed from office for her misconduct on so many issues, including what she's doing to President Trump. But this guy was let go, just like Lake and Riley. The killer, the person that killed Lake and Riley, was forced to be let go, went to Georgia and killed Lake and Riley. Same thing happened today, but we were able to get finally get the police in to get that detainer and get ICE on top of this issue. Wow. So this is happening every day. God knows how many there are going on, Larry. We are unsafe and we are unprosperous under this terrible, terrible administration. We've got to do everything we can to get President Trump elected.
Thank you, Claudia Tenney. We always appreciate it. Folks, I'll be right back with my last word.
Chinese diplomats are reportedly meeting with congressional staff to lobby against a bill that would force the sale of TikTok. Two Capitol Hill staffers tell Politico the sit-downs were initiated by the Chinese embassy. TikTok says it's not aware of the meetings. Bills are advancing in multiple states, which could ban thousands of your favorite snacks. New York, Illinois, and Pennsylvania are introducing measures to ban 13 additives over suspected health risks. New Jersey and Missouri are considering this, too. Snacks that could be on the chopping block include Lucky Charms, Flamin' Hot Cheetos, Oreos, and Gatorade. There are concerns the food dyes in those products may cause health problems. And Amazon is selling its smart grocery cart technology to third-party retailers. A handful of Price Chopper and McKeever's Market stores in Kansas and Missouri are testing them out. They track and tally up items using a combo of computer vision and sensors. A display on the cart adjusts the total price in real time. Amazon launched the cart in 2020 at its Fresh supermarket chain. That's business. In New York, I'm CJ Papa.
November and May, it's the greatest place in the world. And June through October, you sleep with one eye open.
Ladson Mills lives on the southern tip of the Charleston Peninsula, an area that is more prone to flooding from high tides and strong storms. The majority of his home is elevated, but the garage isn't. His family marked the floodwater level from Hurricane Hugo in 1989.
And it's about, well, it's about here, right about here on my chest.
There are days when the sun is out and the water comes up and the entire peninsula floods.
It doesn't take a powerful hurricane to cause floods. In November, high tides left parts of the city underwater. That's why Charleston is making sea level resilience a priority. Construction crews are raising the streets and the sea walls by Mills' home by 2 feet.
When we have higher tides than we've had for the last 100 years, it's going to protect this community against those tides.
The new walls, some of which are already finished, will help prevent water from coming into the city. And about a mile away, crews are working on a massive pump to deal with water when it's already in the city, whether it's from heavy rain or tides that jump the sea walls.
If we get a substantial storm, we'll get 6, 8, 10, 12 inches of water in the streets.
It might not look like much yet, But by 2025, this will be a massive water pump that will help keep city streets clear.
High tide flooding that used to happen every year or two is now happening in a week or more per year. And we're seeing this in lots of coastal communities.
Bob Kopp contributed to the federal report and is a professor at Rutgers University, one of the leading centers for sea level projections. He says the report isn't meant to be alarming, but instead used as a roadmap so that coastal communities like Charleston can prepare for the coming decades.
If we plan, we can deal with a foot of sea level rise. The only reason we can't, in general, is if we don't plan.
Professor Kopp says the Gulf and East Coast are the most susceptible to rising tides over time. The West Coast, not so much, because he says that coast tends to be a little bit steeper.
Hello to our viewers in Israel watching on Cellcom. Thank you for watching Fox. For more, check us out on foxbusiness.com as well as foxnews.com. Keep it here.
When news breaks.
And we begin with this Fox News alert.
America turns to Fox News Channel.
We are feeling the impact all across the country.
Stream it now on the Fox News International app. It's the place for top political coverage.
It's a very big day here at the White House.
With must-see insight and analysis you won't get anywhere else.
We will never be the media mob.
And stay on top of the U.S. markets with Fox Business. Watch your favorite shows live or get them on demand. Download the Fox News International app now from the Apple or Google Play stores. Also available on Amazon Fire.
So, anti-Semitism is a hate crime. Full stop, period, end of sentence. And DEI fosters anti-Semitism. Stop it, stop it, stop it. And
from the Fox News Podcasts Network.
I'm Janice Dean, Fox News senior meteorologist. Be sure to subscribe to the Janice Dean Podcast at foxnewspodcast.com or wherever you listen to your podcasts. And don't forget to spread the sunshine.